Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Well, our open letter project to Dr. Dobson continues to rumble forward, and today there is a very significant article in the Los Angeles Times by staff writer Stephanie Simon, and for at least 12 hours, it has been on their homepage, latimes.com, and out of, what, 40 news stories on their homepage, it's been the second story on their homepage. And that is encouraging to us because our goal is to reach the millions of pro-lifers in America and to let them know that there is a choice between pro-life strategies. The one strategy is child-killing regulations, which undermine personhood and the God-given right to life of the unborn. And the other strategy includes incrementalism. It includes political activism. It includes legislation. But what it excludes is any law that ends with, and then you could kill the baby. Because, first of all, we don't have the authority from God to use a strategy that authorizes the killing of unborn children. We don't have that authority from God, and so we dishonor God when we compromise on his enduring command, do not murder. And so we will not use that strategy, but we can use all the tools at our disposal that are morally honoring to God. That honor God morally, we will use those tools. And I'm going to read to you this LA Times article, but let me remind you, when Daniel, in the Old Testament, he was involved in party politics also. And he was a governor over, what was it, 40 provinces in Babylon. And they had 120 provinces in the entire empire. And it was a huge empire. What did it stretch from the Nile River to India? It was just a huge empire, and Daniel was about to be appointed to be the governor over the entire empire. But the king was manipulated into passing a wicked law that said for 30 days no one could pray to any god but to his idol. And so what did Daniel do? Well, Daniel was very politically astute. He knew how much good that he could accomplish if he was the governor of the entire empire, not just over a third of the empire, 40 provinces, but he would then have authority over the other two supra-governors. So what did Daniel do? He knew that he could comply with that law. He didn't have to pray out loud. He didn't have to pray visibly. He could just pray to God in his heart. And so he thought, you know, this is just a small compromise. I'm not even doing anything immoral. I'm just going to pray to God in my heart. That's what I'll do. That way, I will win this election. This is mine to lose. I'm a shoo-in. I will win this election. I'll be the governor over the entire empire. And then think of all the good I will do. So that's what he did. So he dishonored God in the smallest way. And what happened? Oh, wait. I've remembered the story incorrectly. He did not dishonor God. He wasn't required by any command of God to pray publicly, but he did so. He opened his windows so that he's a governor. Imagine he lived in a mansion off the royal court. And he opened his windows and he prayed to the God of Israel, openly violating the command of man. Why would he do that? Because we must obey God rather than man. And did that mean he could lose the upcoming election, so to speak? It meant he could lose his life. In fact, that was what was about to happen. Daniel was going to lose his life. But God so loved Daniel because Daniel was willing to risk everything. And you know what that means? In order to honor God and to obey God, Being willing to risk everything also means being willing to risk political power. And it means being willing to risk your reputation among men, because men will think that you are backward and a fool if you honor God instead of being politically sophisticated. Daniel would have been accused of not being politically sophisticated. But you know what? Even though men dishonored him, God honored Daniel. And God eventually gave to Daniel the prophecy. He gave to Daniel the prophecy of the timing of the coming of the Messiah. And Daniel's place in God's history among men is guaranteed for all of eternity future, because he honored God above men. And Christians, the body of Christ, is being trained by our Christian leaders through the pro-life movement to dishonor God, to obey man rather than God, and to compromise and to be ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ by never calling for judges who fear God and will protect the innocent, but only calling for the kind of judges who gave us the Dred Scott decision. Original intent. Judges who are not judicial activists. Judges who are strict constructionists, who sentenced Dred Scott back into slavery because they were upholding the Constitution. And we look back at that ruling and we know it was one of the shameful moments of American history. Their philosophy that led to that ruling is exactly the shameful philosophy of Focus on the Family and Americans United for Life and National Right to Life, when they defend judges who rule to keep partial birth abortion legal. You know what our goal is? There's a rift in the pro-life movement, and our goal is to outlaw partial birth abortion. The other side, they're celebrating this Gonzales v. Carhart ruling. They're celebrating it. They're applauding it. They're praising the judges, even though it's a brutally wicked ruling that does not outlaw partial birth abortion. But our side is not going to celebrate unless we have, by law, protected innocent children. The other side celebrates when they get a 4-inch variation in a child-killing regulation that you can perform a partial birth abortion just with a 4-inch variation. You can't pull them out to the neck, just to the navel. All right, let's go to the L.A. Times. L.A. is what, the second largest city in America? The L.A. Times is the number one newspaper in the state of California. And here's this article: for some, anti-abortion is all or nothing. Now, this article by Stephanie Simon, she got it wrong. And remember, we record our interviews. And she did get it wrong. She said to Brian Rohrbaugh that, isn't this the old argument between the purist and the incrementalist? And Brian is the president of Colorado Right to Life. And he said, oh, no. We support incremental legislation to save babies. We just don't support any laws that end with, and then you could kill the baby, because that undermines personhood in the mind of the voting public, and it undermines the God-given right to life in the mind of our judges and our politicians. So, yeah, we support incrementalism. I told her the same thing, and we recorded this, but she did ignore that. Why? Because it's a little simpler, and this happens always in the mainstream media. It happens always. They simplify things to something that they can understand, even when you've explicitly told them it's not true. And so it's happened here, but that's okay. We expect that. For some, anti-abortion is all or nothing. Those who want an all-out ban accuse some of the biggest groups in the movement of moral bankruptcy for focusing on incremental change. By Stephanie Simon, L.A. Times staff writer, June 6th, today, 2007. And by the way, we've pointed out repeatedly, I pointed this out to Focus on the Family, that if we got a ban of all abortion in Colorado, we support that. But that would be incrementalism, because it'd still be legal in Kansas. And even if we outlawed all abortion in America, it would still be incrementalism because it's still legal in Canada and Mexico and Europe, and there would still be about 44 million children killed every year around the world. So we are not against incrementalism. We are against violating God's enduring command, do not murder. We are against pro-life efforts that undermine personhood. And that does have a consequence in the battle to protect unborn children. And that part of the equation has never been addressed, never been addressed by the pro-life industry, never been addressed. Let's go to the article now in the LA Times. As they gathered Tuesday for a national strategy session, anti-abortion activists faced an unexpected revolt in their own ranks. Now, they're referring to a meeting that was called after the Gonzales v. Carhart ruling was issued. And so some of the big players, Concerned Women for America, Americans United for Life, National Right to Life, called the strategy meeting, and they called it to occur about 10 days or so before the annual convention of National Right to Life, which will be in Kansas City. And so that's the meeting they're talking about. And for some reason, Colorado Right to Life was not invited to the meeting. And neither was the American Life League, Judy Brown, Human Life International, Flip Bantam, Operation Rescue, Operation Save America. So none of those groups were invited. I don't know why. Anyway, some of the biggest groups in the movement, including Focus on the Family and National Right to Life, are under attack from fellow activists. Now, this is the words of Stephanie Simon, LA Times staff writer. Focus on the Family and National Right to Life are under attack from fellow activists who accuse them of turning a godly cause into a money-grubbing industry. Those groups, and by the way, we have been doing the research to find out how much money in the tens of millions have been raised by the pro-life industry under the guise of the partial birth abortion ban, and it is hundreds of millions of dollars, and that money was raised while misleading Christians and donors into believing that this ban had the authority to actually save the lives of at least some unborn children. It never did. That was always fraudulent fundraising. Always. And now we have Family Research Council on record in the Washington Post saying that many people, including some of their own workers, believe that this ban, partial birth abortion ban, will not result in even a single, in not even one less abortion in the country. Not even one. Imagine that. What a strategy, huh? $250 million, 15 years, and we pass a law and we celebrate, and it lacks the authority to save one child. And so you have pro-life leaders resorting to what? Well, we try to keep it in the news. Well, we're keeping it in the news. For about a thousandth of the money you spent, the other side, the industry spent per month, we're keeping it in the news. We wanted to let people know how vulgar and wicked and evil this is. Well, we're doing that with this ruling. You guys do not want the American people or Christians or pro-lifers, you, the pro-life industry, you do not want the public to know how brutally wicked this ruling is. Why is that? If your goal is to let people know how brutally wicked these abortion procedures are, then help us get our letter in the next publication. We just got $1,000 came in by credit card from the state of Washington. $1,000 from a graphic artist who works for the U.S. Air Force. Pretty cool. Thank you. And if anyone out there wants this open letter to Dr. Dobson to run in your local newspaper, and you want to be a signer, let us know at Bob and Yart Live, 800-8-N-YART. That's 800-836-9278. Or you can email me at bob@kgov.com. Bob@kgov.com. If you miss a radio program, that's where you can hear them. They're archived indefinitely. Bob@kgov.com. Okay, let's continue. These groups have raised tens, this is the LA Times, Stephanie Simon. These groups have raised tens of millions of dollars and trumpeted victory after incremental victory in the 34 years since Roe v. Wade legalized abortion. But about one in every five pregnancies in the U.S. still ends in abortion. Deeply frustrated, several small anti-abortion groups have launched a campaign to force their movement back to an absolutist position. No more compromises, no more half-steps, just an all-out effort for an all-out ban. And that's exactly not true. That's not true, but I don't mind being called a purist, like the Puritans. You know, God's morality is pure. And if you think you can violate or compromise on God's moral truth and do right, then you're incorrect. And you're dishonoring God, and that will backfire in ways that you could never calculate. Okay. They are making their position clear in full-page ads that will run in conservative publications over the next few months. By the way, this Monday, June 11th, we should be in a nationwide conservative magazine with a full-page ad. This is the second version of the ad because, of course, a magazine page could only fit half of what a newspaper page could fit. So, and we'll talk about that next week, Lord willing. Okay, they're making their position clear in full-page ads that will run in conservative publications over the next few months. They are urging donors to stop contributing to groups that focus on making it more difficult, but not impossible, for women to obtain abortions. Okay, and I don't recall saying that. Don't give money to National Right to Life. But, hey, who am I to impose my morality on this reporter? So I'd say that would be appropriate if, in fact, you've identified that child-killing regulations, that is a morally bankrupt strategy, and it's also a foolish strategy, then sure, of course, I would not continue to fund that strategy. Okay, let's continue. Okay, so stop donors from contributing groups, da-da-da. The broader movement is claiming that we are saving lives, but we're not, said Brian Rohrbaugh, one of the dissident activists. It can't get any worse than that. Okay, and Brian was referring to Gonzalez v. Carhart, that it has the authority to save lives, and the pro-life industry is claiming that this is saving lives, and it is not. It can't get any worse than that. Tension between the incremental and absolutist camps, and by the way, we support incrementalism, but not compromised incrementalism. Not passing laws that say, and then you could kill the baby. Not passing laws that will keep abortion legal after Roe v. Wade is overturned. Won't that be the utter tragedy of all this? The first baby who is killed by the authority of pro-life laws when Roe v. Wade is overturned. That baby, the blood of that baby, will be solely on the hands of our Christian pro-life leaders. That baby will have been killed by the authority granted the abortionist by pro-life legislation. If you want to pass laws that say that states cannot put their retirement fund money in any investment firm that supports abortion, praise the Lord. That doesn't authorize the killing of an unborn child. If you want to say that no doctor can perform medical treatment or operation on a minor child without the parents being involved, praise the Lord. That doesn't authorize the killing of a baby. But if you say that an abortionist cannot kill a baby unless the parents sign a permission slip, then you are authorizing the killing of an unborn child. By the way, our phone number is 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. And Dr. Albert Mohler, perhaps you know that name, he has misrepresented us also regarding this incrementalist issue. But, hey, we understand. You know, sometimes the truth it takes a little bit of effort to first learn the truth and then to understand it. All right, now let's continue with this article in the LA Times. The tension between the incrementalist and absolutist camps has existed in the anti-abortion movement from the beginning, but it has burst into the open now in part because of the recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling on the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act. In April, the justices upheld the federal law, Okay. However, the ruling also explicitly endorsed other methods of abortion. At one point, the justices explained that doctors could avoid prosecution by killing the fetus with a lethal injection in the womb before suctioning out its brain. To Rohrbaugh, president of Colorado Right to Life, that decision was nothing short of evil, an endorsement of murder. He was appalled that his fellow activists not only claimed the ruling as a victory, but also used it as a fundraising tool, appealing to donors for more money to keep the momentum going. And we've read one of those fundraising letters on this program back a few weeks ago. "We've been promised for almost 40 years, said Rohrbaugh, that the strategy of electing Republicans would get us a Republican Supreme Court that would end abortion. And that has not happened. If we raise money to do the same thing over and over again, we will never, ever establish personhood for all unborn children. The partial birth abortion ruling," now they're going to quote the Reverend Bob Enyart. I hate that Reverend. I just don't like that. Pastor Bob Enyart, I prefer. They quote the Reverend Bob Enyart, pastor of Denver Bible Church. "The partial birth ruling gives us the most powerful example we've ever had of how morally bankrupt this strategy is." Wow. All right. Yeah, I think it is the most powerful example. Enyart and Rohrbaugh wrote a long public letter of rebuke to James Dobson, founder of Focus on the Family, and other anti-abortion activists who applauded the Supreme Court decision. The last line of the letter, "Please repent, Dr. Dobson." That letter was turned into ads that have run in the Washington Times and in Dobson's hometown newspaper, the Colorado Springs Gazette, and will soon appear in other publications, Enyart said. Well, the next one is this Monday. The anti-abortion absolutists, and we are absolutely against abortion, so that's okay. The anti-abortion absolutists have far less clout than the more established groups that met this week in Washington, D.C. to plan their next legal and legislative moves. But they have a few big names backing them, including former Republican presidential candidate Alan Keyes. Now, Alan Keyes is not a signer to our open letter to Dr. Dobson, but he has vociferously condemned the partial birth abortion ruling as wicked. He has condemned it as wicked and a violation of God's law and man's law and everything that we know to be right and true. And you could hear and watch Alan Keyes condemn that ruling right on the homepage of ColoradoRightToLife.org. Okay. So we're smaller, but we have a few big names backing us, including former Republican presidential candidate Alan Keyes and activist Judy Brown of the American Life League. And by the way, Judy Brown, she not only agrees, she's a signer of the letter. And that's extraordinary to us. And Judy has stepped up to the plate in big ways in promoting this, writing columns about this that are syndicated, helping to get this in more newspapers. Several pastors, Christian radio hosts, and bloggers are also in their camp, and they vow to keep escalating their attacks. And they mention the budgets of the groups, that Colorado Right to Life has a budget of about $150,000 a year. And National Right to Life Committee, in contrast, raised almost $10 million last year, and a good chunk of it for the partial birth abortion ban. And Americans United for Life, $2 million. And, hey, Colorado Right to Life, they get a lot of bang for their buck. But it's not only them. It's also Human Life International. And it's also Operation Rescue, Operation Save America. And it's also Bob and Yurt Live, Denver Bible Church. And it's also Judy Brown, American Life League. And what? They're probably one of the top few pro-life groups in the country. So, yeah, it's sort of like the David and Goliath, but that's all right. We don't mind those odds at all. You know what they say? They say, me and God make a majority. God and me make a majority. That's the wrong way to say it. God makes a majority. That's it. Me and God, when it's me and God, we're right. No, when it's God, he's right. Doesn't matter what you think. By the way, we have a DVD called 40 Years in the Wilderness. It is absolutely extraordinary. It is the most extraordinary DVD that Bob and Yurt Live has ever been involved with. It's 40 Years in the Wilderness. And this is the DVD of the event at the Capitol, the 40th anniversary, marking 40 years of legalized child killing in Colorado when we passed, our Republican governor signed the first pro-abortion law in the nation. The first pro-abortion law in the nation. See if you will hear this from Focus on the Family. See if you've learned this from Americans United for Life or Concerned Women for America or the Christian Coalition or the Moral Majority or National Right to Life. See if you learned this from them. The first permissive abortion law was signed by a Republican governor, John Love of Colorado. Roe v. Wade, that evil decision that led to 50 million dead, Roe v. Wade was written by a Republican justice, Harry Blackmun, Republican judge on the U.S. Supreme Court. Roe v. Wade was passed by Republican judges, five Republican judges on the U.S. Supreme Court. Have you heard that? Oh, you haven't heard that. Oh. The current Supreme Court, seven of the nine are Republican judges, and they have kept abortion legal in America. The federal judiciary is 60% Republican. 60%. And it is solidly pro-abortion. So what does the pro-life industry want you to do? Give millions more for other child-killing regulations, but most importantly, get Republicans elected. That's why National Right to Life loves Arnold Schwarzenegger, governor of California, who is totally pro-abortion, and pro-homosexuality and anti-Christian morality. But hey, he gets a boost from National Right to Life because they're a wing of the Republican Party. How many lobbyist groups get money from the National Political Party? Republican National Committee, they give money in the election cycles to Colorado Right to Life. What do they give them, $500,000? How often does that happen? That shows you they're bought and paid for by party politics. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord and not dishonor him as we fight to stop the killing of children. Maranatha Christian Center, what a fabulous school in Arvada. And our website is kgov.com.